before and after people record.
Right.
So I'm always like, let's hit it. But yeah, well, anyway, Dr. Art, welcome to Radiant Creators. Thanks for being on. Here we interview inspiring people to inspire others. That's the idea, you know. If a person's doing inspiring work or something inspiring or whatever it is, it's just kind of contagious. And so the work you're doing with, we'll get into everything that you're doing for sure. But thought we'd share the inspiration. And we were just talking about Arizona. And Phoenix, even in the 90s, if you drove through here, Phoenix and Scottsdale, it was all Pima cotton fields and irrigation going across the endless desert. And now, if you fly in here, if you fly into Phoenix International at night, or you fly out at night, this place is bigger than LA. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh.
When my buddy first, like I said, we were talking, when we first moved out there in the early 90s, there was still orange groves outside of Mesa. He could leave his apartment and walk down the street, and completely mm-hmm. different from what it is now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we replaced all that with pavement and stuff like that.
Pavement and more houses and more houses and more houses.
Yeah. Yeah, more like, 1,500 units that are exactly the same, whether they're like,
whether you like it or not, yeah.
Whether you like it or not, whether they're individual little houses or whether they are, little apartments or whatever. So thanks for coming on. And so Dr. Art, one thing about your YouTube is your bio, like your about me is very, very slight. It's like all the crap in one spot. Here's a couple items, like this is like my favorite nylon braided fuel hose. Yeah. And so really, so who is Dr. Art? And, you really are bridging the gap. I call this Dr. Art's Hot Rod Rehab, best of analog old school and computerized new school, because you're doing both, which I think is important. Yeah.
Well, it's when I was, teenager and even before that and stuff like that, and in the 20s, that's all there was analog points, maybe an electronic ignition here and there, but, carburetors and, your combination tech dwell meter to tune everything in and a vacuum gauge, and that's what you had. And that, progressed. So I've always had extra cars around. Right now, I just got 5 at the house, which is kind of low for me. But mostly, the majority of them, Ford, the Ford company, Mercury products and things like that. Lots of F-100s, F-250s, Broncos, probably close to 200 Mustangs in and out. But I've had a plethora of everything. Like I got, Dodge pickup trucks and Porsche 914s and El Caminos and, you name it. So it's a whole, like, oh, this is cool. I'll buy that. Oldsmobile Cutlass T-top one from the mid 70s. Just whatever's kind of cool at the moment, pick up and enjoy for a while. But it started, this mechanical kind of obsession probably started really young, because I can remember probably maybe 10 years old. And for Christmas, I got this 150-in-1 electronic projects little board. And what it was a board with all kinds of different resistors and capacitors and kajingas on it. And they gave you all these wires with bare ends, and all these components were linked. They had like a little spring that you push over the spring, put the wire in, and attach different things. And there's a book they gave you, and you could make 150 different things. You could make a radio and different crystals get different channels, and you could make a strobe light, and you could make a loudspeaker, and you could make all this kind of stuff. So the kind of like, oh, this is cool, mechanical stuff started, probably way back then, before then. And it was, lawnmowers, mini bikes, go-karts, dragging home cars at 14 years old, get yelled at for that, and flip them 6 months later and, being a 14-year-old kid and make $300 and give your dad $100 for using the driveway. And, it was carte blanche after that to use the house. But, and I've been you know, to make the, you know, the side stuff's always fun, but for the real money part of it, I've always been automotive, either retail, sold new and used cars for years, worked fixed ops, service advisors, service, you know, manager, directors, recon manager, you know, did training for corporations for Toyota and Cummins and Nissan, and was with Toyota on the retail side for 13, 14 years. And then the last 13 years was with Nissan North America here in Tennessee. And the last seven of that, I ran the certified pre-owned program for all the U.S. dealers. So I had been to 500 different Nissan stores, and we would, my group of contracted employees and regular field folks, we would made a program, and we, you know, would train everyone from the mechanic to the owner of the store on the whole program. So I've always been, you know, kind of knee deep in it, and you know, for, you know, luck, I would say, just, you know, did real well at that. So
yeah,
I was able to have all this, all the side stuff.
So you started at 14 dragging home cars and flipping them.
Yeah. And it's, and it was originally not going to be a flip, but I was told I had to get rid of it.
So, yeah.
Well, and unfortunately at that time I had a buddy whose dad was, he was, you know, he had a Corvette and he had stuff, and he's like, he kind of helped me stuff to get the thing running. And before it was cool, I made it black primer and painted the wheels red, you know, with little dog dish hubcaps, like kind of like a, you know, not knowing, you know, and this was, yeah, this was, you know, early 80s, and then just got it running. And, you know, I think I clamped a glass pack on it, and then it ran and drove. And it, what you did at the time, you know, you had to put an ad in the newspaper.
Yeah.
With your telephone number. And then, you know, a guy and his kid came out and seen it, and they loved it, and they gave me the money for it. And they're like, shouldn't we pay your dad? I'm like, no, you got to pay me.
Wow.
So, but then I, you know, I really had to wait, you know, for my, you know, actual car, my first actual car, you know, for a little bit for then, but, that's how it all started.
Wow. Really. Right there in the driveway at 14, your first car dealership, your first pre-owned.
Yeah, exactly. My first pre-owned reconditioned vehicle. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Wow. Okay. So there is a history there. Well, on the, so your channel is called, you know, Dr. R's Hot Rod Rehab. And I was thinking about what is a hot rod, because since you're working on old analog metal and also, you know, new, you know, digital metal, let's call it. Mm-hmm. I thought about, well, what is a hot rod? So I looked up, you know, two definitions. One is the Collins Dictionary. And I don't think it's quite so accurate. It says U.S. slang, an automobile, usually an old one, stripped of extraneous parts, adjusted or rebuilt for quick acceleration and great speed. And I thought, well, that's kind of it, but they're saying old. And then the Oxford Dictionary said, modify a vehicle or other device to make it faster and more powerful. And so really, we've been hot rodding ever since the Model T, and people have always really hot rodded the vehicles of the day because they were there. And so really, you know, hot rodding hasn't stopped, right? I mean, you're just doing, like, you're doing the hot rodding of the day today, which is, you know, computers, cars. And I really wouldn't say cars have computers. They have more like circuit boards, you know. Right. But you can definitely reprogram the chip in it, or chips in it. And then you can, and when I look at what you do, it's amazing, because I had never really seen it. And when you can just adjust your timing as if it's like a spreadsheet and just say, okay, at this RPM, max the timing out all the way. You know, I love the old stuff and the new stuff, but that is phenomenal. I mean, how did you start messing? Well, I guess you've been working in the industry for quite a while, but really, was that kind of mind blowing when you first saw that begin to evolve, where you don't have to mess with vacuum advance or advancing the timing? You can just go, at this RPM, I want this advance.
I want this much fuel, and I want this much spark, and I want this much. Yes. Yeah. That's why. Yeah. I'm like, this is great. And I have, you know, carburetor versus fuel injection arguments with people all the time, but that's cool. Whatever you like is good. Mm-hmm. But where first started, it's kind of a two layers when I got into the computer controlled vehicles. We'll go back to how I got the Dr. Art
monitor. Yeah.
Name that was in the late 1990s, early 2000s. Part of that I lived out in Vegas, and I was a little bit older than most of the guys hanging around, but it was like a Mustang club. And I had, you know, a real nice Fox body, and it was later model stuff. But the problem was that the younger guys, they didn't understand the first that, you know, kind of analog fuel injection, the Eek ones. And they'd be like, oh, I'm just going to tear it all apart and, you know, put a carburetor on. And I'm like, no, stop. These things are so simple. There's like five things that go wrong with these cars. Just bring it by. We'll figure it out. It just, you know, I had all kinds of different, you know, oh, these go bad, so I have three of those, you know, and get them going. And what happened shortly after that, anytime one of their buddies like had a Mustang or a car that, you know, with a computer on it that didn't run, they go like, oh, you have to take it to Art. He's the Mustang doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would get people coming up to me, and that's how I'm like, okay, cool. And I was helping out buddies. But then peripheral people started to come by, you know, kind of thinking they were going to get, you know, kind of like the same favor. And I don't know them, you know, I'll help somebody out, but to a point. So what I did, I had business cards printed up, Dr. Art's Hot Rod Rehab. So whenever they would ask me, hey, can you help me with this? I'd be like, sure. And I'd hand them a card. They'd be like, oh, no, they know that they have to, you know, monetize their visit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how that started. So I just stuck with that. And through the years, you know, stuck with that. And I've had, you know, different little websites where you had, you know, like Commission Junction, where you have your website and a list of parts. People click on it, they buy it.
Yeah.
You know, get a couple bucks, just like the Amazon links and that everyone has now.
Yeah.
And then I originally started a YouTube channel just to kind of document for my own memory what I was doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. I'm going to take this engine out of this car, and these connectors are here, this harness is here, this is what this bolt's like, here's how the water pump goes on, dot, 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 dot. And I started doing a little bit of that, and it was about probably 4 years ago. Yeah, because it was the beginning of 2000, and I always make a little list. What do you want to learn this year? And I was like, I think I'd like to learn how to edit videos and actual kind of dive into it a little bit. So a couple different things, and talked to a couple people that were kind of in my YouTube purview. And there's three or four guys out there that really helped me get started. They said, you know, here's, because doing a YouTube video is like a 300 layer onion. It's not as easy as you know.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Even doing just a live is, you know, it's prep and it's time and it's a lot of work. So they would, okay, here's what you need to do. And here's, you know, to make a thumbnail, and here's how to, you know, to see, make the hours, and here's how to make a description, and here's how to do tags, and here's how to this, so you can eventually get monetized and make a little money at it. And I was like, cool, this is great. And I told myself, I'm going to be happy. I'll go ahead and I'll work at this. I'll try new things. And if I can make enough money to buy a cheeseburger, I'm a winner.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, was able to do that. And then I'm like, oh, okay. And then I would talk to a few more people, and they'd be like, well, you know, you really should do this. And your really video needs to be more than at least 8 minutes, so you can get mid-roll ads, because that pays double, and you know, so it just evolved, and I started, then it becomes a game, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, how many subs do I have? Hey, how much did I make last month? Hey, I didn't make it a lot of money from YouTube, but I made this much on my Amazon links, and these people sent me these lawn $300 worth of lawn products, make them a video, and this and that. So I'm like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
So it's, and now, I kind of stopped doing a lot of because I get bombarded with people want me to, you know, in your in email box, you sell our, you know, our shampoo rugs and, you know, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. And then, yeah, I just was talking to the gentleman on the screen here this week about his stuff. He's out in Kansas. He's a Chrysler Master Tech. But what I've been doing lately, I'll go back here a little bit if I'm just rambling on, but
oh, not at all.
What started me going into programming computers is I wanted to build a. I've always helped had buddies build them, but I always wanted to build a turbocharged car, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't know anything about it, but I had a lot of guys that, you know, told me this and that, and were into it and stuff like that. And so he said, you have to go to the Turbo Forums. And it's an old school, just forums, that's been around for probably 20 years. And if anybody ever wants to learn anything about fuel injection or how to turbocharge a vehicle with, you know, $10,000 or $50, read there. That's
what's it called? It's called
Turbo Forums.
Turbo. Okay.
Yeah, real simple. And there's so much content. There's, you know, from when guys would, you know, hook up the boost line to the mechanical fuel pump to overboost the mechanical fuel pump so they can raise the pressure on a blow through application and stuff like that. So I was reading all this and I picked up this 64 Ford Falcon out here. It was a roller clean body. It was a 6-cylinder car. Brought it home, stripped it all down, put a narrowed rear end in it, tubbed it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Put in a 5-speed, picked up a 302 from a buddy of mine that he added in his corner for $50 and did a, you know, at home ring and bearing job on it. And bought a FiTech, which is a basically a carburetor replacement, port injected. And that would handle boost and stuff like that. Built a homemade turbo system from some F-150 shorty headers flipped forward and connected with pipes and welded up. You know, you have a welder and a grinder, you could build anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, a bunch of eBay parts. And then, hey, I got a turbo. Cool. So, wow. And then a couple years after that, I picked up my 86 Ranger. And at the time it had, when I bought it, it had a blown up 350 Chevy setup in it. Got that running. And then I started collecting parts to do a turbo LS motor through trading and, you know, this car for that and parts and pieces and things like that. Got that put in. Had a buddy of mine initially help me program and get it running because I didn't know. But I'm like, well, I need to know how to do this. So I had to buy the HP tuner dongle, which is the biggest investment. It's $300. Learn how to do it. Get into that. Start doing that. Going, oh. And then I was, turned out to that, I kind of figured it out. Once I figured out, this is just layers of spreadsheets and calculations. It's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Started doing, guys would run just carburetors on LS motors. They want to take off the fuel injection. I programmed their ECU so they would run the, basically run the spark on the car and the timing. So they didn't have to buy the $600 MSD box and the harness and all those $1,000 worth of stuff. They can run it with their factory harness. Didn't have to buy anything.
Oh, wow. Okay. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. $200 and you're going down the road. Started there. Then, started looking at some of the Jeep stuff with Tony and the early Dodge, you know, 96 to 2002, the JTEC computers, Jeep truck engine computer is what JTEC stands for.
Okay, I always wondered.
And I was like, oh, this is simple. Because since it's an off-road use vehicle, okay, in quotes, what happens under between 3/4 and full acceleration, the factory really knocks the timing down, and they do that to meet federal emissions because of NOx emissions, okay? So they kind of detune the engine. And that's kind of why if you're in like your modern SUV or something like that, and you're at a stop sign and you take off like a 3/4 throttle and you're like, oh, this thing's doing pretty good. Then the next time you go full throttle and you're like, what happened? It's just, there's less, they engineer less timing into the vehicle at full throttle to meet the EPA standards.
Oh, okay.
So when you have an off-road use vehicle only, you can adjust the timing curve to make that engine work to where in its happy zone. And that's just, you know, run some digits and, you know, have the engine run basically how it was engineered, you know, for horsepower, and make all kinds of ridiculous power that was never there. And the more that a car is detuned from the factory, the more you can put into it. And, you know, it doesn't hurt anything. You don't need to change injectors or run special gas or, you know, stuff like that. You add a little bit of fuel to make up for the extra timing, and you got more fuel and timing on the top, and then you're just going.
Wow.
And then lately started doing Hemi cars and stuff like that, so.
Dodge Hemis, right?
Dodge Hemis, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah, there's one right here.
Oh, there you go.
So that's I mean, you know, kind of a long-winded short version.
Oh, but it's good though. That's why we're here. Yeah, I noticed that. Dodge still makes some kind of monsters out there. There's some of the neighbors have Dodges with the Hemis in there. And I'm like, 390 what? Like, they're putting pretty. They seem like they're like the last real like fire-breathing performance manufacturer. Like, I don't know any other American cars that are really doing that, but I guess there's still a lot of room for improvement on those when you actually tune the computer.
Yeah, there's a lot of a real common modification with the Hemis is the camshafts, because they're as just a way to design the camshafts fail in them, and that's just because the camshaft is very much higher over the crankshaft than a normal engine on a Hemi. So it doesn't get as much splash oil. And if you drive it like a grandma, cam runs dry and you burn the lifters up. Okay. So,
Okay.
the short version, but they'll put in these, you know, whether it's Texas Speed or Brian Tooley or whoever, big cams in it. And they'll put the cam in there to get it all back together, and it'll hit the key, and it might fire up. It might not, but it definitely is not going to idle and it's not going to drive. And it's really interesting. The more I get into this, there's like five basic settings on these Hemi computers where you can change that, and it'll start and run and drive enough so they can get it, you know, fine tuned.
Mm-hmm.
But without doing those five steps, they don't run.
Wow. And that's the funny thing, where it seems like cars in the past, let's say I mean, it's kind of hard to put a year on it because it really varies. Let's just say, in the 79, maybe like say up until like 1979, it seemed like a lot of manufacturers, they tried to get everything they could out of the car. So when you bought it, it was tuned to, to give you all it could. But now they're actually tuned to kind of be rather domesticated.
Yeah, they would pre-electronics, they would, you know, like retard the camshafts and lower the compression and things like that, so the engines would meet emissions, kind of mechanically detune it. Well, the newer ones are not mechanically detuned, they're just electronically detuned. And that's kind of the difference. That's why you can go into even like a modern like Hyundai or Kia, their V6 twin turbo setups and their Stingers or whatever, some light modifications on that and some computer tuning, those things are just ridiculous.
Yeah, and that really, see, that's what I like about it. So, I mean, for me, I'm very, very lucky in that I'm agnostic, I guess you could say. You know, I love the old, I love the old heavy metal. I love analog. You know, I love vacuum tubes. I do.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got a receiver and you got like a record player and you want to hear some beautiful analog sound, you want a receiver that has vacuum tubes, you know, so I love.
I got an amp back here with, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, analog is beautiful. You know, I love points. I love it all. So I'm really lucky, you know, I don't have a hang up there with one or the other, but when I look at, you know, cars of the day, so when they're Model Ts, I've seen, you know, you could order in catalogs, you could order hot rod parts for Model Ts. People have always hot rodded the cars of the day because that was there. And many times it was cheap. Like, you know, I had a 66 Chevelle, probably like, oh my gosh, I don't know. Let's just say in the mid 90s, you know, and now hot rod at that sum. And I bought that car for a couple $100s. I wish I kept it. Just stick it. That's how much they were.
There was great.
Yeah. It was a piece of, it was a, you know, 66 Chevelle. Who cares? You know,
right.
I think I bought it for $900 and paid too much for it. I mean, now, you know, wish I'd kept it. I still love it. But like, so you always work with almost like the junk of your time. You know, like
yeah, give me it something is, that I yeah. that's I'm 100% guilty of that, because I, you know, I'll go buy somebody's junk and I'll hot rod it. I mean, I have, you know, a hot rodded, you know, F-250s that I found in a barn, and
oh yes,
you know, it's stuff like that, and stuff like the Jeep behind you. That's just great. You could, I mean, that's, you know, it's they're heavy, but you got a cool 2-door one, and you can do all kinds of stuff to them. You know, you put a, you know, you lift that and you do a little engine work to it and stuff like that, and throw some lights and some bumpers on it. And you're like, oh, this thing's cool.
Yeah.
That's what I was, you know, and I guess it started, you know, when the second guy got a Model T in the same town.
It did. So much. I mean, you got a picture, like they went out to the cornfields, all the Model Ts that were, you know.
Yeah. They're like, I'm faster than you. No, I did this. No, check out, I did this. That's how, you know.
Yeah. And they're like neck and neck at 38 miles an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know?
But
that took a half mile to get to 38. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I'm sure people hot rod, like I had a Volkswagen repair shop in California when I lived in Southern California. We specialized in bugs and Carmen Ghias. We fixed other Volkswagens too, but that was kind of our thing. And when I lived there, every third car in California was a Volkswagen bug, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, people don't realize, like, you can hot rod the crap out of a Volkswagen engine. I mean,
they don't weigh nothing.
Yeah, I mean,
you double the horsepower, you double the fun, you know, and it's easy to go from 40 to 80 in them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so you get that 1600 cc engine and dual Webers on that thing, and it's a machine.
You get a dual port and do a little head work and throw a cam in it, and
then you pull up next to a nice 911 and like rev it up, and then you just walk them. And your 69 bug.
Yeah.
So that's the fun. Yeah, it really is. And so you're working with the cars of the day. And I think this is kind of important, because when you can, if a person wanted a hot rod today, or, you know, hot rodding to me just means that you've made it your own. You've either, it's all about what was your mission. Maybe your mission was you wanted it to be a daily driver. Everything works. You can throw keys to your mother-in-law and she can drive it. The AC works. Everything works. Maybe that's your goal. So whatever the goal is, whether it's a fast quarter mile, a circle track, daily driver, you know, whatever it is, if you have that in mind, then you're hot rodding it to me. You know, you're doing something specific. And I think that quite possibly, like the truck behind me, I love my 78, you know, Cherokee, but it might be out of reach for a lot of people. Like, it's just too much. Where like Mission Improbable, that you've done videos with, you know, that's like a 90 something Cherokee, 96 XJ. Right. Mm-hmm. So thing is, when you get into like the junk of the day, right? Like the cars of the day that are, they're a couple years old, they've lost their, like, you know, value, you might say. So an XJ is great, because I look and I can go out there and find XJs. Maybe I have to go and get it. Maybe I have to have it shipped to me, whatever. But like, you know, under $5,000, like even $3,500, $3,000 will buy you a nice XJ.
Yeah, and this one, I mean, Tony's was literally, in a field, the guy had a defunct auto dealership that had been closed for years. And this is just one of the ones that was left over. It sat there so long, somebody, you know, stole the catalytic converter out of it. You know, all under the hood was packed with pine needles and stuff like that. We went and put it on the trailer and hauled it back and put a battery in it, and, you know, somehow it fired up. So,
And I think that's approachable. Yeah.
And they're not that common. I mean, they used to be pretty much get any old car for $500-$600 way back when.
Yeah.
But now they're, you know, junk is $3,000.
Yes.
But
yeah.
You can, they're still out there. You find, you just have to open up your peripheral a little bit and, you know, your options. I mean, you can, you know, I'll, you know, if I think it's, you know, unless it's hideously ugly, I'll hot rod anything. I don't, you know, I don't
care
that much.
That's the thing. Like, you know, I almost don't want to mention it because it can do a lot of damage to a person financially.
mentally and financially. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, make sure your relationship is stable before you do this. Facebook Marketplace. I mean, look for vehicles there. Maybe you got to go to Utah to get it, but you can still find, if you have something in mind, you can probably find it, but it's getting to the point where you either can't afford it or you got to fix it, you know, like, that's right. But that's the thing about hot rodding is I think that maybe something like the XJ, something a bit newer, it offers a person something more, how'd I put it? A new hot rod or something more manageable, attainable, that makes sense. I don't know. I mean, who doesn't want a 66, you know, Chevy 2? I do, you know, but I'd probably have to get one that was rusted in half if I could find it, you know, with no engine, that like, you know, a family of possums has been living in for 12 years and stuff like that, you know.
And you have to, because I always went for weird stuff.
Yeah.
Because I like to flip cars because I like to take people's money.
Yeah.
But, you know, way back when, I mean, Ford F-100s.
Yes, years. Beautiful.
Because nobody really knew what a 100 was, and then when somebody had it, they just dismissed it. But it's a, you know, a lightweight, basically F-150 with a V8, and stuff in it, so you can all the, you know, Mustang hot rod parts, you know, that you'd put on a 70s, you know, Mustang, they all go in there. You can make it sound really cool. You can, you know, lower it slightly, you know, even with the I-beams and stuff like that, and clean it up and make it cool. And people wanted this. And I did real great with them for years until freaking Gas Monkey decided to put one on television. And then the whole market, you know, the prices tripled overnight. And I'm like, well, that's done. Then I went into, you know, and I started, you know, I had a bunch of Mercury Cougars and did real good with those. Had a real beautiful one, 68. But then I was shipping Cougars and parts over to the UK. And if you really want to, it doesn't take a lot of effort, because people in the UK, if you have a really clean American whatever, it doesn't really even matter that much, even like Falcons, I'd find it, because I lived out in Las Vegas and here in Tennessee, not a lot of rusty cars, because I'm from Wisconsin, I know what a rusty car is. For the people that buy them in the UK, you take out the seats, you take out all the carpet, so that you videotape the floorboards and the trunk and everything like that, like a full disclosure. And you go on their UK Falcon or UK Mustang or whatever boards, and you go, hey guys, what do you think about this one? And inevitably you'll have somebody going, I'm sending a guy with a transport in a truck. He'll be there, you know, Tuesday.
Wow, yeah.
Because they don't want to buy them if they're too rusty, because they won't pass their MOT. And they don't want to spend the money on them. And they've had tons of nightmares. So if you just take out all the floorboards, take out all the carpet, all the seats and stuff like that, and say, yeah, I have all this stuff, but here's what the actual car looks like underneath floorboards and stuff like that. And they'll buy them and you'll all the money for them. It's a tiny bit of a hassle, but it's really not bad, because you just go, look, you transport it. It's here. I have a title. Send me a deposit when the guy comes with the truck. Certified check, and you know, we're good. And that worked real well pre-lockdown. Since then, it hasn't worked really that well.
Yeah, you need like shipping brokers now and such.
It's they took a fun thing and made it overcomplicated, like everything else. So
yeah, yeah, they did. The F-100 is actually a very cool truck. It reminds me, I had like a 1976 Dodge Power Wagon, you know, with the slants.
Oh, yeah, I love a Power Wagon. Yeah.
Yeah. But back when they were humble and beautiful, and it was 4x4, it was a slant six in it, and it was a special model that they only made for the military and the Forestry Service, and the Forestry Service was selling their old ones, and this thing was too tough to actually even wear. I mean, and so, you know, it.
Yeah, the springs did not give them nothing.
No,
yeah, yeah.
No, it would batter the hell out of you know. Anyway, so yeah, I kind of wish I still had that vehicle too. But yeah, I like the weird stuff too. It's always nice to get. I mean, I love my Chevys. I mean, of course, but, and they're easiest. I mean, by far, I think, but,
yeah.
But the weird stuff, like, I mean, one of the reasons I have the Cherokee, the Chief behind me, is that it's got an AMC 360, you know, and I love the AMC stuff. Like, I would love to have like a 70, anything like 70 to 74 Javelin.
Okay.
You know, would just be phenomenal. But, you know, the last one I saw that was even approachable was like 19, it was like 19,000 and it was turd brown, you know.
There was a relatively inexpensive blue one on Marketplace here in Nashville, if you want to pop that up.
Oh, you know, I'll have to look. Yeah.
The AMC stuff be cool. The AMC guys are definitely AMC guys way back when I was in the military, lived in California up in Victorville. Buddy of mine, Doug Eisenbeis, I think was his name, but he had an AMX that he had, you know, all the stuff done, the 401 with, you know, all the,
oh yeah,
spent all the money on it. His family was doing okay, so he could afford to just do whatever he wanted to the car. That thing was ridiculously fast for a late 80s car.
Yeah.
At the time period and stuff like that. You know, it's the proverbial, you know, take the $100 bill off the dash type car.
So. Oh wow, yeah. So it is fun to find the odd stuff. Well, that kind of make one of the things you've got on the channel is Big Richard, and yes. you have some merch that says, you know, life is best with a Big Richard. So what is Big Richard?
Big Richard was a project that between Uncle Tony, Kiwi, and myself. We came up with for a vehicle for Power Tour, because we're going to take, Tony's going to take his Charger, Kiwi's going to take Big Marge, and all I had was my, you know, like Nissan corporate lease, you know, new vehicles and stuff like that, because the Ranger's not really, it's just a race truck, and then the Falcon, I had taken it apart because it was so ugly, I had to paint it, and nobody, you know, and it's lingered for a little bit since then, shamingly so, but, so originally, it was a Dodge that he had, Kiwi had bought originally to do some work to for himself. And he was about to, you know, kind of cut it up and do some things, but he found one that was, you know, 1,000% in better shape. So he went with that one, did that one, and, you know, years ago. And it sat, at one time in its life, Big Richard had been in a flood up to its dash, and like sandy muck and stuff like that. So, we're like, one day we're over at Kiwi shop, and then we go back and look at this thing, and I'm like, oh, this thing's too cool. We got to pull this thing out of here. Because at the time I had little extra time, and I'm like, it had a motor that yeah. turned over. It had a transmission in it. And that was about it. No accessories, no nothing, no. So we went to start rebuilding this, getting it ready for Power Tour brakes. You know, electrical, redid the engine on the channel, you know, in the garage, you know, a driveway rebuild. And Tony did the transmission and stuff like that. But we just didn't, it kind of, you know, stacking tolerances, and it didn't make it to Power Tour.
Yeah.
Which is okay, because it really needed more attention, you know, a little more time, a little more attention, a little more money and stuff like that to get it all done right.
It looked rough when you first got it.
it had fenders in the hood, but no front end.
Yeah.
No radiator. The radiator support was in the back and stuff like that. You know, one of the doors was off of it. It had, you know, sitting on two wheels, and the front wheels were like this because the tie rod was all pretzeled and stuff like that. So it was, It was pretty bad. This is, you know, it was bad, but, got a lot of help in it from those guys. And then it's just because it's an old truck, it's stuff's kind of easy, right? It just takes time. It just takes time when it's in such bad shape. Cause everything is full of, you know, what we called flood goo, which is just sticks and rocks and, you know, in the motor and the trans and the rear end and all the brakes and all that. So, to get that all cleaned out and try to do this all on, you know, quickly and with no budget. It was fun, and it's running and driving. It's up on the lift in my shop now, and I had to was loading some content here. I had to rewire the whole back of the truck because I had no power to the taillights, and the whole like taillight harness that runs from, it actually starts at the firewall and goes all the way back on the truck. That whole harness was just shot.
Yeah.
So I had to make a new harness, run all new wires, and so kind of everything's been like that. Really nothing that was, you know, the truck had nothing, you know, nothing worked. So now it's actually, I've taken it around the block, but that's as far as it probably should have went.
And, yeah.
It'll get it finished up here. I had some stuff I need to do to the Ranger for, cause it's, you know, finally getting cool enough to go racing for the last part of the season here up here. So we didn't have your summer, but we had the summer of sweat. It was just, I mean, it was 97, 98 degrees every day for like 2 months and all the humidity up here.
Oh yeah. It's not fun.
Oh, it was horrible. So nobody was going to the track when it's 100 degrees out at night, and you didn't want to come home. I come home, get in the pool because I was just be overheated from the day.
Oh yeah.
And then you go in the house and you're like, well, I'm not going back outside.
No, not a chance. Not a chance. Yeah.
Chance. So that's pretty much ready to go now and finish this stuff up on Big Richard and then finally finish up my Falcon and then who knows what.
The heat kind of drains you. I've been, this guy, the one behind me would be back on the road if it wasn't for the heat this summer. Cause it's been a hot summer and it's not that it's been the hottest it's ever been, but it should be cooled off by now, but we're still like 100 or so during the day. So it's just, you know, after 4 hours, you know, same as where you're at, you're just kind of done. If you're out there in the heat of the day for 4 hours, and it always ends up the time you have, it's always the hottest part of the day to actually get out there. And so it's really challenging. Yeah.
Because the shop where I have the lift on, the house is set up. It had a garage. When I bought the house, it had a, you know, the house, the two car attached to the house in the house. And the people before us, they had built another two car garage for the guys that use like a woodworking. That's where he did his woodworking. So that's 2.5.
Wow.
And then I wanted to add a lift. So I added another 24 feet in, you know, and tall in a metal building out there, but it's a metal building, even though it's insulated, it's still a metal building in the sun.
Yes.
So it's a little tough to, you know, to run the, you know, the mobile air conditioner to get it to cool down and stuff after it's been in the heat all day. So it's not a lot got done this summer out there.
It's still, that's why challenge.
I did a lot more, you know, computer tuning and stuff like that. Cause I can do that. Yeah. I could, you know, sit up here in your, you know, in your shorts and, you know, help a guy out and ship it back to him. And you don't break a sweat at all. You don't get dirty. It's kind of nice.
Oh, and it's true. I noticed that you were doing videos like that. Just like, you know, we're going to now too. We're going to do this specifically. Like, check this out. That's cool. Well, what I was going to, yeah, I'll ask you now, because it's like, you really, it makes a point where, so we all like to have, well, one thing, I think it's amazing that you have a lift. I would, you know, like this is the whole of my garage right here. So I am, my, you know, life goal bucket list is a lift, or, you know, I'll settle for a hole dug in the ground that I can drive over, you know, that'll work with some stairs to it. That'll work. A pit will just fine too. Pits are awesome because nothing can fall off of it. I like that.
Right. You know? That's why I got a 4-post lift and not a 2-post.
Yeah, you want to get the, yeah, because lifts to me are one of those things where, even though, like, you know, it's secure, it's kind of like jack stands. You never really feel like,
yeah.
You're like, yeah, I don't really feel good right now. Yeah, you never rule your ideas, and you shouldn't be. You know, it's kind of like using a table saw. I never relax using a table saw.
Right.
Like, and you shouldn't be. I mean,
No. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. If you're relaxed using a table saw or under a lift, you gotta pay more attention. You know, a little fear can help you grow older. You know.
Yeah. At this point, if I didn't have a lift, I, you know, my second garage would just be a big train room. You know, and it'd be model trains.
Yeah. Oh, model trains. Okay, we'll talk about that.
Well, because, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm done laying on the floor rolling around, even though I still do it, but it's just like,
it gets hard. It gets a little harder after 50 than 60. Yeah, then, yeah, it does. It gets a little harder, you know? Yeah. Well, it's one of the things I was going to, you know, want to ask about was, so a lot of us who have, you know, mechanical dexterity, we have some, you know, mechanic skills, we think to ourselves like, yeah. And we also, we oftentimes end up doing work for people, you know,
right.
And it seems to me like a real sweet spot. And I'm definitely, we're not stealing business from Dr. Art, you know, but it seems like it really is a place where if you're computer savvy, or even if you're not, I mean, you don't have to be computers. How'd I put it? If you're a computer person, great. But even if you're just whatever, even if you're not, if you are a mechanic first, then it just seems like a natural progression, because who doesn't want to make money out of the garage? Who doesn't want to, you know, help people? And it seems like it really offers a whole vast amount of opportunity to the backyard mechanic who either is helping their friends and or making money.
Well, yeah, and it is very important that you have a very solid mechanical understanding of how vehicles work before you get into tuning. Mm-hmm. Because, and lately I had, you know, they don't, but it was a late model Hemi for a guy, and it's kind of the same thing, and he's still having trouble. I'm like, look, this thing should run beautiful. Okay, you have something mechanical wrong with the car that we need to address first. And I was doing it remotely. He was in California. So if you don't have that and you can't recognize that, yes, there's probably some vacuum leak or background or something going on with this vehicle besides what you're doing for him on the computer, you're just going to chase that and it'll never end. So you have to be able to recognize, okay, with everything set up, you know, electronically, how it should function perfectly, and it doesn't function perfectly, well, then there's a mechanical issue. What do we have going on? Then you have to just start back to, you know, okay, let's treat this like it's a tractor. Does it,
yes,
have compression? Does it have spark on all the cylinders? Does it, you know, does the, when you hit the key, does the little thing go around, you know? And go back to that. And that helps a lot. That and a basic understanding of basic math. If you're bad at math, don't be a computer programmer for vehicles or even you know, for, you know, video games or nothing like that, because it's all math and tables based and calculations of this and that and percentages of this and that. And if you can't, all that stuff I can fire off in my head. You know, I'm pretty, you know, I have a good math mind.
Yeah,
which helps immensely for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, because it's sort of like like in high school, we used to have drafting class if you wanted to take it. You know, it was one of the electives if you wanted. Mm-hmm. There's always those couple classes you could take, you know, that were not part of the standard curriculum. And I thought drafting was cool. And you know, it was definitely difficult to get the lines drawn just right, and then this, and how am I going to make this 3D? And oh, it was these little brain teasers, you know. And we would, you know, draw our little drawings and then measurement everything, and then get graded. And then, of course, CAD comes along, you know, like digital drafting. And without this ever not being true, people who learned how to actually do mechanical drawings on paper, you know, and could do that, could actually make a damn gear, you know, could have to measure the teeth, and I have to, oh my God, you know, we're always better at CAD, always at digital. You know, there's just that they just had something that those who strictly learned via digital didn't have. You know, it's kind of like artists. Every artist I've known that has, you know, used physical mediums who then moves to digital is better.
Right. You know? And it's the same thing applies, because I've seen guys that really weren't the greatest like mechanics, but they were machinists, and they were like CNC machinists, and they programmed, they understood, you know, left, right, up, down, three dimensional, you know, movement and stuff like that. And they're like, oh no, this should be, you know, over here like this. And that's just how they're, you know, that's how their head works.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're very good at it too. So, yeah, that part of it is, you know, you could, like I said, you can be great, you know, on computers and doing this, but you need to have the, you know, mechanical and mathematical backgrounds help immensely. Well, you know, it just speeds things up.
You're not
staring at it going,
yeah,
you know, which you still have to do once in a while, but it helps.
Oh, it definitely does. And well, also one thing about, you know, hot rodding is that it seems like it helps people. So I'm just thinking about people who aren't already, you know, hot rodders, right? Who might have interest. Why I think what you're doing helps people get into it who aren't into it is that a lot of people don't have a 66 Chevelle. They wouldn't want a 57 Chevy. They don't want, you know, a Dodge Charger. You know, they like newer vehicles. And in a sense, hot rodding gets them in the garage doing something. And I think one of the things that we're, well, I don't think I know, one of the things that we're lacking in our, I'll say country, but world, the Western world, I'll just focus on America. I can say, you know, I'll say that here in America, something that we're missing, I can tell you we're missing it in Arizona. I know we're missing it in Colorado and California, all the places I've lived, is people don't use their hands anymore. And I really think it's important that, you know, it is very sad to see a person not have mechanical dexterity. And that's that is a sad life if you can't use your fingers for anything more than like typing on a phone. And unfortunately, we have, you know, generations doing that. You know, it's like
it's 100% true, because I mean, I had an elective. I had a wood shop elective. I had a metal shop, 2 years of metal shop. I had a house wiring elective. I had a welding elective. I had a small engine elective. All these shop courses that they used to do that. You know, if you're a good skilled tradesperson, you can make a lot more money than some guy sitting in an office, you know, making presentations all day long, you know, and probably be a lot happier doing it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I have a son-in-law who's, you know, very smart and very book smart, but you know, fills a lawnmower oil up to the top of the dipstick. You
know? Yeah.
So, you know, it's the basic stuff. That's why in like last summer, I did a bunch of go-kart stuff, because I was like, okay, yeah, this stuff is, it's cool and it's cheap to do. The engines are plentiful and cheap now. And what's nice about the go-karts, I mean, they all have either one or two axle sizes, so tires fit from one to another, and, you know, chains are kind of universal and stuff like that. So it's real easy to put this stuff together. And that's a basic that you could take any 14-year-old kid that puts his phone down for an hour and say, okay, put these four bolts on and your engine's bolted down. Make sure it's straight with this chain. We'll put the chain on. Does it look straight? Okay, it's straight, bolted down, and it's going to work. And then they get that, you know, basic, oh, it has to be straight to work. Yes. And it's got to be like this. And we have to do this first. And we can't just, you know, jam on this because it won't run right. You have to, you know, take the steps, teach them how to do the steps. I taught in the various different roles a lot of kids are brought into like dealerships and the service department start off in the, you know, in the lube rack.
Yeah.
You know, and they come the first day in lube rack with their toolbox with the handle on top and want to start rebuilding engines. You're like, okay. Hang on, dude. Let's get you some basics here. Yeah. But a lot of them, if they have the right attitude, within a few years are, you know, good mainline techs, you know, on their way to being master techs and stuff like that, and, you know, making real good money at it. So it's just, there's a lack of people teaching mechanical skills to young people. And that's why I think that's why there's a shortage of mechanics, because they're not taught in school. That's why there's a shortage of good, you know, HVAC and concrete guys, you know.
Yeah.
You don't get taught that anymore. You don't get taught basic electronics in high school.
You know, you got
to go to a trade school, and if no one introduces it to you, it's not even on your purview. You graduate high school, and you're, you know, unless you have parents that go, here's your path, and you're not, you know, in battle with them, you get out and you're left loose in the world, and you go, okay, what do I do now? no one's introduced you to anything, but I don't want to go to college. What do I do? I don't know. And they end up, you know, calling you and asking about your, if you want to buy an extended warranty on your car, you know, unfortunately that's where they end up, you know, when they could have been, you know, if you, it sparked something in them at 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, where they took an interest in welding or woodwork or, you know, like drafting or something like that, then they'd have some kind of path to go down. I think we're putting out a lot of, you know, aimless folks out here. It's either, you know, you go to college or you McDonald's, and that's not really fair to somebody with, you know, half a brain to make them do that.
It's really true. And that's, it's something, well, you know, and since I'm technically male, you know, I know these days that's a weird thing to say, right?
But, yeah.
You know, technically, biologically male, you know, and, you know, grew up with a very proud redneck heritage, you know, I'm happy with that, you know, and liked all the things that guys like fast cars and stuff like that. It does seem that this thing with young men, and I can say this being, you know, a slightly older guy now, you know, not as young as I was, that like young men are the most like aimless dumbasses on the planet. Like there's really nothing that is like prone to screwing up than a young male. Like they're built to do it. Right. So what makes that not happen is when older men take an interest in them and they have mentors and someone shows them how to do things like rebuild engines or, you know, you name it, like, yeah, like they start at the lube rack and then they move their way up. So I hear what you're saying, because that's the thing. There's just so many young men that don't have older men that have skills that take an interest in them that help them.
That's, I mean, and I was lucky. I had, you know, neighbors and stuff were, you know, cool old guys with hot rods and stuff like that, that were willing to, you know, hey, what are you doing? They just didn't go, hey, get out of here. Oh, we're, you know, here's, we're rebuilding a Holley. Here, clean this for me. Well, and I'll show you how to do this, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, clean it. Yeah. I mean, rebuilding a Holley, what? It's the greatest thing ever, you know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's the simplest thing ever, but, you know, you give it to somebody who's never seen one. They're like, I don't know what to do. I don't even know what tool I would use to open this thing up, you know, or what's going on. It's not tough. No, you know, like I always said, you know, when you know, nobody was born a plumber or a fireman or a nurse or a doctor. It's everybody learns everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing is that tough. It's, you know, and most of it, once you get the basics down, it's just repetitive day after day. And you pick up nuances and get better at it. You master A, and you pick up a little bit of B, then now you got your master of A and B, now you go into C, now you have three skills.
Yeah.
It's kind of that simple. That's like when I went back to, you know, hey, I want to, you know, what do you want to learn this year? Oh, I want to learn to edit videos, because I kind of force myself to learn new things every year, and I may suck at them. I bought electric guitars. I can play three chords in 20 years, you know, it doesn't, my brain does not wrap around. It's cool. And I like them. I got one here, one there. And I appreciate them for what they look like and how they, but I just, it's just not there. So, but you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about having interests. I mean, having interests is so important, because then like no one is ever bored who's got interests. Like I'm the same way. I have a few guitars and, you know, I love them, and I've slowly developed a little bit of ability to play them. There's been these big lacks, like big gaps where I haven't touched it at all. But all the same, I just keep after it. I don't know. You never know. Like things have a weird schedule to them. Like you'll buy something, you think this is neat, or you find it and then you put it on the shelf. And 5 years later, you go, this is the day. You know.
and that's how my head works for a lot of stuff. You know, new things, I'll be like, just taking it in, and not really maybe picking it up as fast as the guy next to me. But like I said, I'll wake up one day and go, oh, that's what it is. And then just, you know, blow past everybody. I just take a long time to upload, and my brain goes, you know, and figures all the little details out. and go, oh, here's poof, here's your answer. And then you just go.
So yeah. Yeah.
I've done that more times than I can count. You know, I'd be like, I don't understand what the hell is going on here. You know, and you just kind of, okay, you get through it. Yeah. I mean, Jimmy down the street figured it out, you know.
Yeah.
Got to be able to do it. Somebody's, you know, and with learning, all the turbo stuff and programming stuff like that, I'm not doing anything new. Everything's copy and paste from the guy who's already done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and fortunately now we live in a world where you can get tons of information. You're not waiting for a, you know, magazine to come out once a month with three new articles in it.
Yeah.
In a limited purview, you know, you got, you know, like the internet, can it interest you in everything all of the time? Well, yeah. Yeah. What do you want to learn today? And it's there.
Yeah.
You put your head down and go for it and learn. Sometimes it's a little wrong information, but it's mostly the path. And you go, oh, okay. Listen to the right people. You can figure out anything you want to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, like, you know, hot rodding can be like so many things. Like I look at some places where it's definitely not dead is pickup trucks. You know, I mean, people love their lift kits and they love their 33-inch tires and they love. And so the thing is, what then would come natural is, well, you got to, you know, tune this thing a little bit different. If that template already exists, then you go to Dr. Art's channel and you can start to get an idea of how you do it, you know?
Yeah. And it's, like, it's somebody's already done it, you know?
Yes.
And that's, you know, my part of it. And along with that, well, like when you get back to building hot rods, I've always been able to kind of see what a project is going to look like 10 steps from now.
Yeah.
Like I would take, like, here, like, let me just give you an example.
Yeah.
And this might be a glary picture. I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but.
Yeah, we can see it. It's a car.
Yeah, 68 Mercury Cougar.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah, real pretty car. That was a $600 tow home in five shades of real shy yellow.
You know? Oh, my gosh.
So, but you sit down and you go, okay, I understand the lines of this. What would look cool? Okay, if it's a kind of a boxy car, it needs this kind of wheel, needs this. It may need a stripe. It may need this color. You know, is it a, would look, car look better in a, you know, pastel or a solid or a thing, or, you know, and you look up stuff and you go, oh, and you kind of formulate, go, okay, here's, this car's going to be beautiful if I do it like this. And then you're like, okay, I can see what it's going to look like. And kind of, there's your motivation when you're doing a 6-year project, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's another skill for people, or just something that benefits so many people, is thinking from the end. Like, you know what you want, you have this vision, and then you figure out, well, you know, what do I want this car to do? You know, do I want this to be, yeah, hot rod, or just whatever it is, you work all that out, you know, maybe even write it down, you know, and then I tell you, you'll get there faster. If you know what you want to do and you figure that out first, you'll get there faster. And there's just, that is an incredible accomplishment. And I shouldn't say even if it takes 6 years, it takes 6 years, that's fine. You know, it's something I wish for everyone to have, you know,
and it's, and maybe not everyone has it. I don't know.
Or be able to do it. Yeah.
And then I've, you know, for all the times I've dragged home ugly cars in front of the house and the, you know, neighbor or somebody work with or something, like, what are you doing with that ugly, you know? And then, you know, the fast forward, whether it's 6 months, 2 years, fill in the blank on the number.
Yeah.
And then you're driving this thing and they're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, I don't know. It's just vision, or maybe I've just flipped enough and, you know what, you know, you paint a car retail red, you're going to, you know, make the money on it. Maybe
that's great.
Maybe it's that simple, you know, I don't know, but, I've always been able to kind of see the, you know, oh, this would look okay. This would look cool. This truck would look good as a gas, or this one would look good if I, you know, drop it 4 inches. This one would, you know. Mm. So, I don't know. I've always, you know, weird stuff. Like, with hot rods, I've built, you know, a handful of V8 Ford Rangers, which are a blast.
Yeah.
And they're cheap to do. Like in, you know, California, they would put V8s in the Toyotas and stuff like that years ago. You know, the little Toyotas.
Yeah.
And those are fun. And I get a blast out of them because I, you know, make them real low and loud and, you know, be able to whip by somebody at the freeway at 90 miles an hour. And this little lowered Ranger just blows by. What the hell was that thing?
Wow. Well, something she mentioned, Toyotas. I mean, there's something people can hot rod. I mean, there's no end when it comes to Toyotas. I mean, if you travel around the world, there's like the poorest third world crap hole has got 70s Toyotas still, you know, climbing over the rutted, muddy roads. Those things, right. You can't kill them. I mean, so, you know, what a fun car to hot rod there. I mean, I'd love to have you know, an old Toyota 4x4. That'd be great, you know.
Oh yeah, I've had an FJ40. The kind of the Jeep looking kind of style, not the big one with the long overhang over the back wheel, but yeah, that thing was, you know, pretty much beat to death, but it wouldn't stop running.
Yeah, I can't kill it. That's wonderful.
Just keep going, just so.
Yeah. And then, so a lot of people have fear of the computerized cars. Now, I understand. Now, I don't so much consider them, you know, computerized. I think more along the lines of they have circuit boards in them. But to me, there's something about, it's kind of two things. So one is, if somebody finds a hot rod, whatever that means to them, like whether it's an old one, you know, it's pure analog bliss, or whether it's a digital, you know, powerhouse, they can get it. They can, to whatever extent, whatever their vision is, they can create it. Then they sort of have this car that, if they choose to keep it, will just run forever. You know,
yeah.
Like they have this confidence. And then, you know, whatever happens in the world, they know that their XJ or their classic, you know, Chief or whatever it is going to run, and they can keep it going. And I think that's really a certain, you know, confidence that people have that I think is great. It can, motorcycles too, you know, like, you know, your, you know, 74 Norton Commando is going to continue running. You can't stop it, you know? So I think it's a lot of confidence to have something that, you know, how it works, and, you know, you can fix it if something goes wrong with it. Because like newer vehicles, I think it's neat. I was in, I forget what it was, but a vehicle that had the integrated iPhone dashboard. And that's the coolest thing ever. I mean, I love it. That's really amazing. But I do sort of fear it. I go, oh my gosh, this is
what kind of a pain is this going to be 20 years old and this thing doesn't work anymore and you can't find parts. And yeah,
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's confidence and longevity that you have this vehicle, you know, like this thing will run now and tomorrow and the next day and the next day, even if I have to fix it, it will run. And it's, it can do that. But yeah, the integrated iPhone dashboard, I'm like, this is so nice. This is bliss. But at the same time, I'm like, this is also, this thing ain't worth nothing after the extended warranty wears out.
Exactly. Yeah, the warranty runs out. You go, here, thank you. I'll take another new one, please. Yeah.
I know. I understand leasing. I'm like, all right, yeah. I don't want it. I don't know, you know. But there seems to be, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, as I say, but there seems to be a cutoff. So like, you know, like right now, you know, is like 2021. So like, there seems to be a cutoff where vehicles have gone too far. So when we think about something that we can hot rod, that we can, you know, tune the computer ourselves, that you can, you know, lift it, lower it, whatever. But there seems to be like right now, maybe vehicles aren't quite built for that. Is that true not true?
If they're on like a legacy platform, like the Chargers and Challengers and stuff like that, they're still okay.
Gotcha.
But like the new platforms coming out where they have these little tiny engines that are, you know, wound up to the bejesus, you know, and a 3-cylinder with a turbo in a SUV for mileage. You're like, what a nightmare this thing's going to be in 10 years. You might as well just scrap it.
Yeah.
Right. And then most of the stuff is so ugly anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I feel bad about. The kids now, they grew up, you know, in the back of minivans and SUVs. They, you know, they weren't, you know, their crazy uncle or their grandpa never had a cool two-door loud, you know, whatever, burning tires out of it, stuff like that. They weren't exposed to any of that. I would like to take the kids today that have really no interest in cars and then take them to like the Harley Earl Museum and show them all the Cadillacs and Buicks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is what a car is supposed to look like. All right. It's supposed to have lines. It's supposed to be beautiful. It's supposed to make you go, oh, I love you. You know, let's get in the marshmallow and go to soccer. You know, they're just boring. And they never had a chance to be around any of the cool stuff. You know, I mean, a mid-60s Cadillac, you know, like a sedan DeVille, even a four-door, like a sedan DeVille, a coupe DeVille, with the stacked headlights and the black and maybe lowered a little bit and stuff like that. And, you know, beautiful car with all the chrome and stuff like that versus, you know, their whatever Kia they're getting to school in. You know, it's like, oh, it's just a shame. Their imagination was never sparked for cars, so they're like, I'll just play baby game in the basement, you know.
The damage. I don't think we'll ever really be able to calculate the damage that the lame ass Dodge Caravan has done to Americans. Like, I mean, what child drove around in a white Dodge Caravan, you know? And then like they're awesome, like, and then like they'd buy a new one. Then the dad would drive the old white Dodge Caravan. And you're like, dude, you need to just like cover yourself in testosterone patches, eat some red meat, listen to Ted Nugent, and like you gotta get over this. You know, like I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, practicality has its lane, but I mean you have to you know deviate a little bit, you know, once in a while you have to.
Yeah,
you can't just people are happy that way, and okay, great, good for you.
I was
never like that. I need to wake the neighbors up every once in a while, and you know, they don't mind. So
yeah, it keeps them alive. It's like I bet that, you know, I'd be curious, like, has anyone ever hot rodded a white Dodge Caravan? I mean, on any level, like
if you had a turbo Caravan and somebody lost their minds and, you know, stripped it out and, you know, boosted the turbo on it, but so far as wanting them to you know spend all the money on wheels and window tinting and you know that kind of stuff, yeah, probably not a lot.
I haven't seen it yet. I bet you someone has like hot rodded a few Ford Tauruses, but not a Dodge Caravan.
So, well, how many years did you work on bugs in California?
Ooh, you know, that the shop was only there about 2 years, but
okay, but again, you take the most mundane Volkswagen bug, you know, and then throw some heat, you know, in the engine, and you know, drop it a little, put some wide fenders on it, some wheels, and drop it down, the nice exhaust. Now you're like, oh, this is now I got something. This thing handles, it goes like crazy, it, you know,
makes yeah. It And it's a whole world. I mean, like, whatever you want to do, you can do it. And also at the time, it was, I don't really know, I couldn't tell you what it would cost now. But at the time, you know, I could pretty much get a new long block for like $800. And I just dropped them out and scoot backwards on my knees with the thing. And
yes, still on the jack. Yeah, still on the.
Yeah, you know, and just
switch it out. And yeah.
Yeah, here's a new engine, you know, $900. And there you go. You got a new bug. It will run forever, you know.
Right.
And if you want to put like a hot carb on it, a better intake, you know, you want to like shave those head gaskets a little bit. If you want this thing to move, I mean, it will surprise you. Most people have driven bugs. They have like 300,000 miles on it. And they think this thing's a slow piece of junk. I'm like, you know, give me a few hours with it.
the first time I drove a bug that was done right was out in California in the military. Buddy had one. And we're down, he lived in West Covina.
Oh, yeah.
And he pulls this thing out, and I'm like, okay, cool, bug. It sounds pretty cool. Then I drove this thing, and it was the whole engine was balanced, so it didn't do the you know, bug things. It was like, you know, a smooth rev. And I'm like, what the heck's going on here? And it had dual carbs and, you know, dual quiets on it. So it wasn't really that loud, but it was like, oh, and the thing was just, I'm like, oh, this is great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're amazing. Yeah. I mean, they can be if one desires, you know, and it's an easy engine to rebuild. You can split that case. You can, it really is an easy one you can do in your garage. Cause once you get it out, it doesn't weigh that much, you know.
Yeah.
You don't even need an engine stand. So they're remarkable machines, you know? And so I want to ask you about, I don't want to keep you all night, but like,
but
like Tesla. So this is the thing. So I'll get back to the cars being overly electric in just a second. Or overly computerized, but the idea of like the Tesla and the Leaf and such like that, it seems that like, I wonder, I guess people do hot rod the Tesla. I mean, it seems like they do. The things are remarkably fast. I've only ever been in one once, and the thing was a rocket. Right. But it doesn't. Do you think that there? Well, I should say think like, are people hot rodding electric cars? Because I mean, if people hot rod anything that runs, they're going to start hot rodding it. So well, like, or is that, or has that ship just flown, and those things are kind of done for the moment anyway? I don't know.
I'm not the biggest fan now. The electric cars, say you take like the Leaf or whatever, they have their niche that half of 1% people that still smoke pipes and use a slide rule. That's their car, you know, and they're happy and they love it and it works for whatever for them and it's great. Cool. You know, the Tesla became, you know, more like an image thing for a while, and that's kind of, you know, tweezled out because they haven't been redesigned since they came out. It's still by the same car. It looks the damn same. So nobody can tell if you have a new one. And there are limited things you can do to them, but then again, once you burn it up, it's $30,000 for a battery pack. No, you just here, recycle the thing, make it a beer can, go get something else. That's the main problem with them. I don't think, like, the bodies are going to wear out, and they don't wear out the brakes, and, you know, they wear out a lot of tires because they're so heavy. And it's what's funny, and I'll go on a little bit of a rant here, but
yes, yeah, go for it.
First time I was in the back of a Tesla Model 3.
Yeah.
It was an Uber coming back from the airport to the house because I had taken an airport, and I got in the back seat, and I'm like, I felt like, remember what a Dodge Intrepid was?
Oh, I think vaguely.
Okay. Yeah. I remember them well because they were sold them used and stuff like that. But the kind of the weird, sparse, cheap plastic interior that they had and just the shape of the seat. It's like Tesla hired the guy from Chrysler to do the interiors.
Oh.
and not the good, not the good, cool stuff. But I'm like, and I was like, look at the door. I'm like, this thing's kind of pretty poor quality, actually.
Hmm.
But that's just me being, you know, I'm kind of an automotive cynic when, you know, it comes to overly, you know, this is the new greatest thing. Yeah, right. It's just, you know, it's all marketing in a very little, it's all sizzle, no steak. But I don't think, you know, the guys, they'll, you know, they rebody the Teslas and they use the drivetrain and, you know, they'll take a, you know, the hot Tesla and strip out the interior, lightweight and stuff like that. Yeah, and it's fast, but it's kind of one dimensional.
Yeah.
Really? Cause I can, you know, occasionally you want to take your hot rod out for more than just here to the car show at the dealership 5 miles
away. Yeah.
You know, you want to go to here, or you want to go to the lake, or you want to go, you know, and, if you have something like that where it's single purpose, you can't, it's really dead for anything else. You know, it's what's called taste specific. It's just your car. So you're stuck with this thing because nobody's going to want to buy a stripped out, you know, Tesla where you worn the battery down to crap and it, you know, the thing's just ragged, you know? So I don't know. I don't see much of a future for those cars until they come up with, like, not the next generation, but the generation beyond that of battery packs, to where the battery pack is not 3/4 of the weight of the car.
Yeah. Yeah. And it may never be, I don't know. I contemplate it also where it's like, we have a charging station near us and it's got like 12 spots on it. And every morning and every lunch hour and then after work and then in the evenings, it's just about always full. It's okay. Often totally full. And I just started thinking like, is that really how you want to spend your life? Like sitting at a charging station? And yeah. Then, sorry, you know, you and then you've got the situation where, you know, in some areas, hoodlums find that a great place to carjack people and rob them. Because
you're sitting duck for 45 minutes, 2 hours.
Yeah, you're sitting there, you know, so it's not that safe in some areas, you know.
Like, they don't even want your shitty car. They'll just come up to you and take your wallet and your purse and yeah. Thanks, bye. What are you going to do?
Continue charging.
Continue charging, yeah. Yeah, they take your phone, you can't call nobody, you can't, you know.
Yeah, when your car's done charging, you can go home and cry about it. Yeah. That's about it, you know. And then, of course, that's if they haven't stolen the copper charging wire, you know, charging cable that your car needs, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So they like they come up and they rob you, then they steal your charging cable, and you're just screwed. You know, there you go, Tesla, live the dream.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, I kind of wonder myself about that, and then of course, slowly, eventually, the truth comes out. As many people have known, but that the batteries do degrade. So you're not going to get the range that you thought you were going to. And then really, it's only good for it. I think they really are a lease mentality, because who really wants that? That car doesn't have longevity. So no, it really is a lease mentality.
And they have terrible residual values.
Yeah.
Because they have to make the lease payments so low that it appeals to those type of people that want an electric vehicle.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. Go ahead.
Nobody wants them when they're old, because now it's 75% battery. Now it's only got 100 miles range. Well, who the hell wants that?
Yeah. What do you use it for? You know, and that's the whole like smart city mentality. You know, so they really. I wonder if now this is way out there, and I mean I know that many people will absolutely not agree with this, and that's totally fine. But I wonder if the Cybertruck was just an experiment to see if people will buy anything, you know?
Well, not so smart people with a lot of money seem to buy a lot of them.
Yeah, you know, it's like if you're just that damn wealthy that you just want it, okay, cool. Hey, amen. And like I said,
yeah,
have
it's, yeah. Oh, look at me. I bought a Cybertruck.
Yeah.
Yay. Good for you. And it's, you know, and I'm going to use it for this and that. You know, the funniest thing, and I use this a lot when I talk to people about, you know, what they're going to use their vehicle for is, you know, guy who used to train Chrysler dealers, he goes, 100% of Jeep owners go off road in their mind.
Yeah,
you know, so people buy these Wranglers and they buy this and they buy these trucks and they're like, I'm gonna tow horses and be adventure man, and then they're just back and forth to school and to the mall, and you know, not much else gets done.
No, it's very true. Like somebody says, Dada Le Breton says that EVs are like margarine. When did the government decided that it was better than butter?
Yeah.
Then we realized it was a scam. And but yeah, so they really are kind of modeled after dumpsters, you know, it's something. So I do wonder, it just seems like an odd vehicle, and I just wonder, like, you know, they are experimenting on us. I'm very much the you know, over the deep end conspiracy theorist person, and I just think, like, you know, they wanted to see, like, can we make this jackass looking stupid vehicle that looks like a dumpster? Let's actually model it after a rolling dumpster, and let's call it, like, you know, let's make it bulletproof just because that's kind of cool, right? They'll buy it for that. And
most dumpsters are bulletproof. Yeah.
Yeah. Most, you know, if you're not using a high caliber weapon, you know, it's like, sure. You know, it's like no one shot a Tesla, a Cybertruck end to end with a 50 cal yet, I don't think, you know, so right. it's not that damn bulletproof, you know, it's bulletproof to the gangsters that might want to carjack you, but that's about it. And so it's like, I do wonder sometimes, I look at it and I can never decide, is that thing cool? Or is it just stupid looking? But I do think that they wanted to see that, could we design this outlandish looking, dumbass looking vehicle that's ungainly, call it a truck. It's not a truck. It can't tow anything. It they suck off-road. You know, if you really want to bang around something that pretty much is like powered by napalm, you know, if you want, sure, go for it. But everything is wrong with that vehicle in my mind. But yet I see them. I see more and more of them, you know, and it makes me even wonder, like, it seems like you had to pre-order it. I think that might have been part of it too. So everybody bought them. They showed up later. It's almost like it kind of delayed people realizing maybe this thing is just another Dodge Caravan.
Well, and the pre-order thing was kind of genius because you get, you know, some guy is, oh, I'm getting a Cybertruck. And he talks about all his buddies and everybody at work for a year, year and a half. Mm-hmm. You know, and in that time, he probably has come out of the ether, but now he's committed. Hey, your truck's here. You know, let's part you with your $100,000. It's today's the day.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Make a ridiculous car that you can't have for 2 years.
Fury, where's your Cybertruck? You've been talking, killing us for 2 years talking about it. Where is it?
Yeah,
we haven't got yours yet, Jerry. Come on.
It's so true. Yeah. So those things are quite the mystery. Well, one of the things about working with newer, I should say, because they're not all newer, they could be in the 80s. I mean, but when we do look at, so you've got your, so a person's got their a little bit of gear. I do think that like your mechanic today, even if you are, I shouldn't say even, but whether one is a professional mechanic or, you know, however that rolls, you know, you've got your shop in the garage, whatever it is, you know, a laptop now is sort of part of being a mechanic in many cases. And a lot of people are afraid of like the kill switch. They're afraid of like the geofencing. They're afraid of, you know, the many things that may exist in, especially like pre-2021 vehicles. But it seems like if you start to get involved and you have some knowledge and you can download your, you know, your configuration, you can look at it, you can tune it, you can see it at least. You know, and I would never suggest anyone do anything illegal. So only what is totally legal. But like, it seems like you'd have control over that. Like if you didn't want your kill switch, you could unkill it. If you didn't want to be stuck in a geofence, you could unstick it. Maybe it's not legal, but you'd have the ability to. Also, a person could know, I think there's something about knowing, like people say, your car is spying on you. Well, those features could get turned off. So it just seems like, you know, part of this hot rodding is also stuff like that. You know,
No, you're right, because my motto is for every system, there's a more powerful anti-system. You just have to figure it out. And it's like, these like BMW and stuff, they were for a while, they were talking about, you know, when you lease your vehicle, well, if you want the heated seats to work, it's an extra $20 a month on a subscription.
You know,
because all you'd have to do is just go into the, you know, if you could find a way to break into the body control module and turn them on and turn the communication to the mothership of BMW off inside the car. Hey, then you got heated seats for free, but you know, what's it cost to build that system to do it? So that there's always a way if somebody can remotely start or stop your car or make the windows lock or do whatever, you can find a way to isolate that and do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So it seems like at least a person would have. So since a laptop is more and more becoming, you know, part of a mechanic's toolbox, if a person who hasn't had interest begins to get the what does that stand for, the HP the dongle you plug in, the
HP tuner,
is that made by HP or is that just called HP?
Yeah, it's not Hewlett Packard. No,
yeah, it's not Hewlett Packard.
It's like Henry Paul, you know, the
Henry
guy
who, Paul,
yeah, you know, the guy who whatever his name is, who invented it.
Okay,
and the company he built around being able to, you know, program, you know, 96 and up, you know,
gotcha.
OBD2 vehicles. But like you're saying, 100%, I mean, 99% of mechanics, first thing they do on a car is they bring it in, they read the codes.
Yeah.
And
You
know, before they even start working on it, or they'll plug it in to see when the last time this service was done, or what's the life of the battery left, or how's the transmission fluid look? You know, because a lot of these things are integrated now.
Mm-hmm.
So then go and go, well, since he's here for this, you know, upsell him this trans service or upsell him this, or his brakes are at this. And they'll, you know, before they even, you know, pop the hood, you know, or thinking about picking up a wrench, they're, you know, they got that car plugged in and they're pulling it up and they're getting all their background information.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing where I wouldn't even say it's a double-edged sword, because it's a beautiful thing where I love a classic vehicle like the Chief behind me, right?
Yeah.
There's no mysteries. If something's not running right or something's not working, you can figure it out. You can figure it out with a test light. You know, it's like, that's it. You can figure it out. There's no mysteries, you know. And even if I want to get like go get a core engine and rebuild it over in the corner, then swap them out one weekend with two friends, you can do it. You know, so there's no mystery. And I like that. There's something powerful about that. But at the same time, so I love the old metal too. But I sometimes think, man, if that damn thing only had an OBD port.
Oh, man, if this thing had fuel injection and an 8-speed transmission, I'd get more than 12 miles in a gallon, you know, and it had, traction control and all four wheels, I could go up this hill a little bit better, you know.
If it had analog brakes, if I could just plug into it and it could tell me what's wrong. Oh, man.
Yeah. If my wipers would work every time, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly, you know. Oh, I know. It has a great big bar under the dash that goes back and forth, which is really cool, but watch out for your small animals.
Don't put your fingers, dog in there. He's sniffing to see what's going on.
Yeah, because it doesn't, not much stops those wipers. But yeah, so there's that, you know, I think if you just like everything, life is so much better, you know, than having like, I like this and I don't like that. I love the old metal, love the digital metal. It's all beautiful. But it seems like if a person starts working with the digital hot rodding, then a lot of what is creepy, I'll call it, that, you know, is rolling in, a lot of like the more, you know, globalist features that are working their way
into overlords in your vehicle watching you and checking your blood sugar as you drive down the road. Yeah.
Yes, checking your blood sugar because the steering wheel can like sense it and
exactly,
you know, exactly, you know, like it's tied to your social credit score, all these things. So the thing is that like, no, I'm not saying, hey, everybody stay legal. I'm not giving any advice. I'm just saying, you know, if you could tell that car to tell the man that you're driving like a grandma, right?
Right. And it amazes me that people are so gullible. That they'll get with their insurance company for their car. An insurance company will ship them this little dongle that monitors them. I'm like, you know what you're doing there, right? Yeah. Next time you crash your car and you were doing 80 instead of 65 and you crash your car, company's going to go, well, you know, you were speeding illegally, so we're not going to cover you. And, you know, why are you giving them your data? They're just selling it. Mm-hmm. Stop it. Stop it. Stop giving people your data.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing about the data. I mean, yeah, you can plug that dongle in and they can get it, but I would dare to say that someone's getting it anyway, you know? So, I have a 2017 Cherokee and it gets code downloads, you know, it goes up, time for an upgrade. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's two-way communication, you know, like the dealership calls me and says, you need an oil change. I'm like, oh, I'm glad you're watching me. That's cool. You know,
glad you're my digital overlord. Thank you. I'll
yeah,
be there.
Yeah. I'll be right over, you know, it's like, please don't hurt my social credit score. You know, it's like, I wanted to drive somewhere far away this weekend, you know, but.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, that's just like these things that, you know, the digital leashes that everyone has to have for some reason. I mean, they know what car you get in. They know where you go when you wake up, when you go to the bathroom, when you what you're eating, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, let's go to McDonald's. Oh, he ate McDonald's. Make his health insurance higher. He's eating that crap, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So that's the thing. If you're carrying your Droid or your iPhone, you know, or you're old school, you've got a BlackBerry, whatever, and you're worried about your car spying on you, you know, it's already done. It's already taken
care
of.
It's already done.
It's already done. Don't worry about it. You know, if you use a credit card, they already know everything anyway, even if it's a debit card, you know. So one last thing I wanted to, you know, mention, and this is one of the things that makes it where I think I'll always have old metal and I'll always have old analog metal and I'll always have new digital metal hot rods, because the best of both worlds is to have both, you know. But something that like the Chief does not have that I wish it did, and maybe one day that's why like you end up putting a modern drivetrain in it or something, is modes. I mean, it's like, and that's one of the things that really intrigues me about also, you know, working with hot rodding and working with the computer is how you could, or the circuit board, is how you could adjust your modes. Because I've got a Kano mode, which is beautiful, you know. I've got downhill mode, this mode. It's got a bunch, has an A-speed transmission. I mean, that costs more than the whole car. But the thing is that, like, it's got sport mode. And that thing, it's got a V6 in it. And it is, it's ferocious in sports mode. I mean, yeah. but you wouldn't want to leave it in sports mode because it grinds off the tires and it gets like a mile a gallon, you know?
Yeah.
But it's on fire when it's in sports mode. And that's the thing I love about, it's one thing about hot rodding, and it's getting into, you know, modes. So you can put it in econo mode, cruise down the highway, take a drive. It does great. You want to, you know, hot rod it, put it in sports mode. That thing is crazy. You wouldn't want to leave it in that mode. It would, you know, it's insane. So there's one for modern day, you know, hot rodding, or I'm not sure how long cars have had modes. I don't know when that started.
Not that long. That's because like your modern Dodge Chargers and Challengers, most of them after 09 have, you know, because they, you know, the Hellcats, they hand you the red key and it's supposed to juice up the power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most of them have had that option to have two separate keys, do two separate tunes.
Yeah.
For a lot of years already. It's just not a function that's used.
Yeah.
Like most of your cars on the road, because when they come off the assembly line, they're all built the same. They all have the same harness. They all have the same ECU. But maybe your car didn't have this version of anti-theft that this other car did. So that's like the LX model, and it costs $2,000 more. Well, you can go in, and you could turn all that stuff on if you know how.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's right there. And if, like, if you have a, especially like a Toyota, because that's what I mostly seen this stuff on, you got a buddy that works at a Toyota shop. He can turn on this feature and that feature and get into your navigation and do all kinds of stuff that you're not supposed to have by just with their laptop and get in, and you don't need codes, you don't need credits or anything like that. It's just change, bip, and the car does more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's so intriguing. And so it's almost like well, I'm glad you got Big Richard, you know, along with working on Mission Improbable and other things, because it's I really think the sweet spot and one that I'm looking to get into, you know, is just living in both worlds, analog points and then also like Mission Improbable. What a great mix, and just to be into both of them. You know, I think I would miss either one if they didn't exist.
Yeah. And you could do it. You could do like a blend. Say like your Cherokee Chief behind you. We could put an Asus fuel injection on it and replace your carburetor. Right. Mm.
Yeah.
With that. And that's going to run the timing. That's going to run, you know, the thing. So you just hop in it, tap the key, boom, it's running. No warm up, hitting gear and go and stuff like that. So you're kind of getting both, but then you're giving up, you know, the EMP proof carburetor on it. So it just depends, you know, you're giving up one for the other, you know? You put like a modern port fuel injection on it. You know, it's a little more efficient. You probably get from, you know, 12, now you're getting 16 miles a gallon, and you know, better cold start, better, you know, performance when it's super hot out, and you can, you know, put a turbo on the thing if you want, you know, and then they'll run all that. But then you're giving up, okay, it's not really running funny, and it's a screwdriver. Okay, perfect. Okay, good. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, it's a tough one. I think you got to love both. You know, you got to love it. I mean, it's like I can always have my more modern engine in it. Then I can have my old school, you know, engine with the carburetor sitting over there on the engine stand and just, hey, you know.
Just in case.
You know, it's like, all right, shit hit the fan. All right. You know, put the old engine back in there. It's a Mad Max time, you know.
Yeah.
But even Mad Max had a blower, you know. So.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Wow. Well, it's been great talking to you. I'm glad that we could, you know, hop on and talk about this stuff, because I think that, I don't know, you know, just bringing peace between the two warring factions, you know, I think
and it's not, it's like, just you know, you like it this way. It's just a, if you're more comfortable with, you know, a carburetor and points, you know, great. But then, you know, the car's going to kind of smell.
Yeah.
from the gas fumes, and, you know, and you can't really get, you know, a lot of, you know, good parts for the old cars anymore and stuff like that. It's all offshore stuff that doesn't last, and you're constantly replacing it. So,
yeah.
You know,
maybe it, yeah, maybe not being too much of a Luddite, you could say, can help you, you know, hot rod a little better, keep up with the times. Because I sometimes think, like, yeah, closed fuel system, I'd love that. That'd be really nice. And like when you come over to somebody's house, they don't think your car is on fire.
Well, yeah, because the modern gas is made to evaporate. It's, you know, yeah, the old gas had stuff where it wouldn't evaporate, so you could park your car in the garage. Now, yeah, if you park your car in the garage and it has a carburetor and it's new gas, you go out there the next morning, you're like, what am I leaking?
I know. Yeah.
You know, and it's not, you're not, it's just the stuff is just, you know.
It's like, it's the way it used to be. Like back when America was America, we just let fuel exhaust evaporate. We had so much of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Closed fuel system. That's for commies right there. You know?
Yeah. But we can, yeah. I can set you up with that. So if you ever decide you want to do that, give me a holler.
Oh, I might. Cause there's a, I do like this. I would like to find a core engine for whether it's a 360 or a 401 or whatever. And, you just get the core, rebuild it, and then, you know, swap it one weekend. And if I did, I think I would modernize it a bit, you know, because I love my Holley. It's beautiful. But sometimes you got to ask yourself, would you miss it that much, really?
Would you miss it that much if you could just hop in it, you know, summer or winter and just go
boom,
back out? Yeah.
Yeah. Would you miss it that much? It's kind of like people always say with Blackberries, you know, I love the tactile keyboard. I love it. I'll never give it up. There's no Blackberries anymore.
Nobody has them.
You didn't love it that much. So it's like, yeah. Wow. Well, Dr. Art, it's been great talking to you. I hope we talk again sometime.
We will.
And yeah, and this was great. So everybody, you know, and I'll put a, well, don't miss Dr. Art and Uncle Tony tomorrow, because now it's the next Wednesday that they're doing
it. It's the second Wednesday of the week on Thursday.
It's the second Wednesday of the week. Yeah, it's Redneck Wednesday. It's second Wednesday.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, everybody, check these guys out tomorrow. It's even better. So take care. Thank you so much for being on.
All right, Craig, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I'll put links to all your stuff in Dr. Art's mostly. He has a merch site, of course, but mostly it's if you go to YouTube and just Dr. Art Hot Rod Rehab.
Rehab.
You're then, there.
Yeah. Watch videos, leave comments, you know, buy merch, all the good stuff, you know.
Yeah. And even if you don't, like I've been, you know, starting to watch the videos, and even if let's just say it's a, you're probably going to get it if you're already kind of, if you're already a mechanic, but even if you don't, just collect the data, because one day all those pieces are going to connect. You know what I mean? I think it's a skill to maybe you don't totally get it, but just watch it. Like, I think one of the greatest videos, and I'll link to it for sure, is the one called History of Engine Computers, Good or Evil. It's an amazing historian's take, explanation, presentation, which is only about 15 minutes, on the history of computers and cars. And it's amazing. So I'll link to that in the show notes for sure, because that's a great place to start to get introduced to your channel and what it's about.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Take care. I'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks. See you.
Bye.